You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
This is Arun Vanigopal sitting in for Leonard Lopate today. Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, Dallas, Baton Rouge. It's hard to hear these stories and to not feel hopeless, angry, confused, and wonder what you're supposed to do with those feelings. Yesterday, as New Yorkers commemorated the second anniversary of the death of Eric Garner, President Obama gave a press conference on Baton Rouge and urged Americans to, quote, focus on words and actions that can unite this country rather than divide it further, to temper our words and open our hearts. Today, we'd like to focus on the words, the art, and the acts of creative expression we produce and turn to in times like these. We're joined now by legendary dancer and choreographer Bill T. Jones, National Book Critics Circle Award-winning poet, essayist, and playwright Claudia Rankine, and Rebecca Carroll, producer of special projects on race at WNYC and LA Times critic at large. Thanks to all of you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here. Wonderful.
I want to start out by asking all of you if you'd like to just react to the news, to what's happening. Where are your thoughts today? Claudia Rankine?
Oh, good morning. Well, it's devastating all around, the idea that traumatized individuals would resort to the violence that, in fact, caused them to feel disaffected in the society and continue that. So, it's hard to know where to stand right now.
Bill T. Jones?
Well, good morning, Claudia. Great honor to be on with you. Thank you very much for inviting me. You know, I'm supposed to be turning in a blog at the end of the week, and I've been wrestling with the blog being about innocence. And, Claudia, maybe you remember this from another country. There comes a point where the two interracial lovers have had a night from hell. She's telling him that she was unfaithful to him with a powerful white man who could get her a job. He is a idealistic, handsome young writer named Vivaldo. And in the kitchen, they're having this kind of confrontation. And Baldwin says this thing, which I wanted to open my blog with. Vivaldo falls into her arms, and it's not sexual. It's almost ferocious, and he begins to weep. And she is stroking his back, stroking out the innocence. That, I thought, that's it. What white America has not known, what Vivaldo learned, that's what's going on right now. That's how it's feeling at the beginning of last week. The innocence is being stroked out of this petulant child that the United States insists on being. And then the shootings of the policemen started. And now I feel humbled, and now I have to go to the artist space. Because the artist has to turn to some sort of, there is no real right and wrong. There is no clear way that you should respond to something as what we're going through right now. And the artist has to, without leaving the world, has got to turn in and look for what is that thing that you poets and even the journalists have to find. What is truth? And the truth, is it really? Can it be? Is it universal? Maybe it's not universal. Maybe it goes back to each moment, the perception in that moment, and trying to do the right thing as best as you can do. That's where I'm at right now, wrestling with this idea of my innocence.
Rebecca, you told one of our producers that these days you're looking to music that, quote, makes me feel like my organs are working. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly with music, hello, Claudia and Bill, it's a great honor to be on with you. I do look to music, but I do also want to say in response as a writer, you know, really struggling with how to write about these times and also thinking about the need, the necessity of new language, of different ways to talk about what is happening, because we see in headlines and reporting, and tweeting and social media, when will it end? This, we need peace. Enough is enough. And these words are absolutely inaudible. They are useless. Nobody hears these words anymore. And so, as a writer, I feel this tremendous pressure to develop new language. And I think, Claudia, you have talked about and written about how language is what determines what happens next. So I feel that very deeply. But then the thing about art and music is what's great about really very fine art and music is that it never sounds like empty rhetoric. You know, it's always, you can always find a new interpretation of that in a painting or in a dance or in a lyric of music or in a bar of music. I mean, there's so many beautiful songs where just that first, you know, hit of music when you hear it and it's so familiar, but you feel something, it pierces your skin and kind of punctures your psyche, you know, in this way. And that's what I meant when I say, you know, it sort of makes you feel, you know, like you're breathing, like you're living, like you're feeling. And that, I think, in times like this is just so crucial and critical. And as creatives and as artists, you know, we have to feel that in order to create the next thing.
And music, the movement of bodies, the silences that take place between two people who are in physical proximity to each other, these things, they do what language, as it's expressed online, for instance, all those tweets and Facebook posts,
right,
the numbing kind of quality of it. It sort of shows us the limitations of language, doesn't it?
Well, certainly the language that we have right now. You know, I mean, I feel that there's an opportunity for us to really, you know, for poets and for writers and for dancers and painters and, you know, to create language. Some of it is written, some is spoken, some of it is performed. But now is a time more, you know, more than ever where we need to do that.
Claudia, a Minnesota public radio reporter, has written that bookstores in the Twin Cities have been struggling to keep your book, Citizen, in stock since the death of Philando Castile. And Quartz advised people to read the book in an article called Simple Self-Care Practices for When It Feels Like the World is Falling Apart. How do you feel now, knowing that so many people are turning to her words right now?
Well, I think what is fantastic and why I love poetry and what it's been fantastic about the word in that genre is that it can return nuance to very complicated situations that get reduced for sound bites, you know, and people become very one-dimensional in their thinking. And I think across the genres, you know, whether it's Bill or Rebecca working, that suddenly these very complicated, historical, structurally confusing moments get opened out in art, to use an umbrella term, and we finally are able to step in and see the complicated ways in which we are negotiating our lives day to day. And so I think that's why people turn to art in these moments.
Now, you've prepared a selection of your book, Citizen, to read for us. Would you like to do that right now?
Sure. A friend writes of the numbing effects of humming, and I return, and it returns you to your own sigh. It's no longer audible. You've grown into it. Some call it aging, an internalized liquid smoke blurring ordinary ache. Just this morning, another, what did he say? Come on, get back in the car. Your partner wants to face off with a mouth, and who knows what handheld objects the other vehicle carries. Trayvon Martin's name sounds from the car radio a dozen times each half hour. You pull your love back into the seat because, though no one seems to be chasing you, the justice system has other plans. Yes, and this is how you are a citizen. Come on, let it go. Move on. Despite the air conditioning, you pull the button back and the window slides down into its door sleeve. A breeze touches your cheek, as something should.
Why this selection today?
Well, I think we are in a kind of generalized sense of grief across the nation on all sides. I mean, this is not just a moment where we can say, look, we're talking about the structural violence of the police force against black people historically playing itself out in the 21st century. Now we also have the traumatized individuals, both of them war veterans, turning that violence back on families and reducing police officers to the structure of the justice system. So it's, you know, we're in a very complicated dynamic right now.
Curious what artists you all are turning to. Bill T. Jones, is there something that some artist who's been particularly helping you find meaning at this moment?
Well, I'm always conflicted between the artist who is a performative public artist and this very alienated, fragile human being who is constantly trying to build a bridge between that inner world and the outer world. As I'm sitting here listening to Claudia and Rebecca and this conversation, I don't want to go to an old cliche, but you know, I can't get past the fact that I wish I could be in some place where people knew how to sing together. And you've heard Bernice Reagan Johnson speak about working with Fannie Lou Hamer, and they'd be in a church in the South in the 60s, and they'd be surrounded by a hostile force of policemen, and they would sing, because she said it's harder for people to kill you when you're singing together. Now, I don't mean this as the embattled black folks. What I'm saying, the people that are mourning right now, which is many of us, and confused, as you say, this is a confusing time, Claudia. What is the what does it mean for the internet to sing in a voice? You know, I shall not be moved. I shall not be moved, just like a tree. Now, that's an old song. It is sentimental. That's a song coming out of the tradition of slavery. That's a song coming out of the buked and scorned narrative of the black American. But it's now a song that has a resonance for me. I hear my mother. I hear a way that we have, as she used to say, how we got over again and again. Now, is that the artist you're talking about? I wish I could turn to Proust, my favorite writer, or I'm reading right now Cormac McCarthy and about the West and the atrocities against Indians. But I go back to my mother and those songs.
Now, some artists have famously responded to real-world tragedies. Picasso famously with Guernica. Nina Simone with her song Mississippi Goddamn, which responded to the death of Medgar Evers, as well as to the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church. Let's just take a minute to listen to her for a minute.
Can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi Goddamn.
Rebecca, how easy do you find it to respond to real life events? Do you take some time to process it, given that you're in the journalism world?
Or certainly, yeah. I mean, as a journalist, as a writer, as a critic, and as a parent, you know, to a young boy, who's growing up brown in this country and in this environment, I do have to take some time. I'm just listening to Nina Simone there, and it makes me think of something that Bill said about sort of struggling between the performative, you know, or the public statement, and those who are sort of out there trying to find their voice or put something. I often respond more, and I'm a huge devout Nina Simone fan, as you know, Arun.
I do.
But I often respond more to her, less to her straight protest music, and more to her songs that sound like a Toni Morrison novel, you know, like Feeling Good or In the Morning or Do What You Gotta Do. And that is a kind of comfort that takes me out of that kind of immediate reaction to the turmoil and the wrong, but it makes me feel held, you know. And I think that's what I look to, that's what I look for in music and in art in these kinds of times, and I hear that in her voice and feel that.
Claudia, anything to add to that?
You know, I was thinking the place that I go I love Nina Simone, but the place that I found myself going in the last few days is not actually to artists, but to philosophers like Judith Butler. And thinking about questions like, you know, who counts as human, whose lives count as lives. And in reading and rereading her, one of the things that she said, which reminded me of what Bill said, is that what we have now are these forms of collective outrage. And to me, that you know, organizations like Black Lives Matter and the diverse number of people who have shown up in the streets is, to me, a kind of collective form of singing, that even though no one is actually literally singing, metaphorically, when I see those images, that's what actually brings comfort to me, that all of these people have gotten together in the streets to say, you know, Baton Rouge, goddamn, or Dallas, goddamn. You know, so it to me, that just that visual image of people putting themselves in the camera's view to say no to this, to me, is a kind of restorative singing.
And you published Citizen 2 months after the death of Michael Brown, if I'm right, and you went to Ferguson shortly after it happened. Why was it important for you to go there?
I oddly was going there anyway. And that had been planned a year before. I was invited by the Pulitzer Foundation. So that was just timing. But since I was there, I did go to the street in which on which he was killed, and walk around. And I think in part I wanted to hear what people had to say, the people who actually lived there, the people who had to negotiate the police violence that, you know, are part of their lives. And so that's what I wanted. I wanted to actually hear for myself what it was, what it meant to live in a place like that. Because I think I had this kind of privileged and deluded notion that when I got there, I could sit in a coffee shop, for instance, and talk to people. There were no coffee shops. You know, we were inside areas of real poverty in the United States, and those people were under constant attack by the police, as been documented by research since then.
Bill, you are at work on a new three-part dance cycle called Analogy. The first part of the trilogy is about your mother-in-law Doris's survival of the Holocaust, but you've also said that with this work you might create the feeling you might get in a black church. What did you mean by that?
Well, I hope all three of them do that. The first one, Dora, I say the wonder is that this is a woman who's now 95, just received the Legion d'honneur from the French government for her work working on a Jewish organization saving children. Dora, one half of her family is deported to Auschwitz. I said to myself, and yet she came out of this war feeling that people were basically good. The second section is my nephew. My nephew is a very beautiful young dancer who went into a life of got involved in the sex trade and drugs, and now he's paralyzed and just trying to claw his way back. And one way he does that is he and I have weekly conversations. It's intergenerational. It is black men trying to talk and love each other publicly. And then the third one is going to be about a quasi-fictitious character who also has a lot to tell us about trauma that's buried so deep that we think it's gone, but it spouts up years later and can kill us. Now, all of the works together, there is a lot of head scratching about what does this image have to do with that? But can you hear my heart in it? Can you hear that in a time when I could escape to abstraction or I could escape to any sort of sound bites of choreography, if there is such a thing, about rage and about that this work is actually trying to grapple publicly with, I don't know, but I think I can do this. I don't know, but I think I can do this. Now that in the black church, you hear, amen. Yes, all right now. That's what art making evermore is for me. That's what this conversation is for me.
By the way, we're hearing from listeners on Twitter. Carlos says he's revisiting Ta-Nehisi Coates, Kendrick Lamar's latest releases, and Sade. Martha says, always and everywhere, James Baldwin, he gives clear-eyed comfort. Rebecca, of all the videos we've been encountering over the last couple years, it's now 2 years yesterday since the death of Eric Garner, are there particular individuals that have stayed with you?
In the world of art?
No. When we're talking about these videos that have become sort of part and parcel of our daily lives that you choose to watch or you refuse to watch, these people who we've watched die in front of us.
I think probably Laquan McDonald. I mean, that's the last one I've watched. I'm not able to watch any more of them. But when I saw his body crumple in the street, it just was. I'm still sort of recovering from having viewed that, and I feel, you know, I feel conflicted about the role that that these videos play. A couple of months ago, I reviewed the special summer edition of Aperture magazine called Vision and Justice, which was guest edited by Sarah Lewis, and what she says, American citizenship has long been a project of vision and justice, and talks about the power of aesthetics and how important that has been, particularly in times of racial turmoil. And I do think that there is a role for those videos. I just don't know what it is because it sickens me to my core. But Laquan, I think of Laquan, probably.
And if I may jump in, you know, one, Rebecca, I think the one that attracts me is the little girl in the back seat of the car last week.
Exactly.
We don't see her.
I couldn't watch that.
Yeah.
We know she's there, and then we hear what she says to her mom, it's going to be all right. That is, it's hard to go on, but you have to go on hearing a child say that. That child really, really moved me.
As well. I mean, just knowing that she said that, knowing that she said it, you almost don't even have to see it. You can envision this baby girl saying to her mom, it's going to be okay. And it's just, I mean, it's just, it provokes a visceral reaction.
Claudia,
we should take heart, right?
But, you know, I have to say that I hear what you're saying, but I think that it's important that these videos are now available. I don't think we would be having these discussions if we were still in that place where black people had a reality that they knew and the rest of America had no proof that this was going on. And so if I had said to you, the little girl said, it's okay, mommy, it's okay, I'm right here with you, and that you did not know for sure that that happened, it would play very differently than to be able to hear it and see it for yourself. So I think that where we are, as gruesome as it is made possible by actually looking at the thing full on for what it is.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. But I would also argue that the people who would believe that she said that or that happened look different from the people who wouldn't.
Right, and I think as a collective, as an American collective, we all, as uncomfortable as it makes us and as traumatizing as it might be for individuals, we all have to begin to share the same vision of this America that we live in.
I've been speaking with legendary choreographer Bill T. Jones and National Book Critics Circle Award-winning poet, essayist, and playwright Claudia Rankin, and Rebecca Carroll, producer of special projects on race at WNYC and critic at large for the Los Angeles Times. Thanks to all of you for joining us today.
Thanks, Arun.
Great honor.
Thank you
all.
Thank you.
Thank you all.